Okay, so this is who I am. Yeah, it's better. Okay. Does that work? I'll find a way to do this somehow. Yeah, you know, a chair, that'd be good. Some place to put the old transparencies. Get the logistics worked out completely. That's good. Whatever mats. No, that's fine. And this pen, I think, this is a pointer. Let's see, and there's a switch on it somehow. Yeah, this one's a little one. Oh yeah, this one's better. Okay, this is good. Okay, so David is going to talk about applications of nonlinear optimization in the oil industry. And I'll try to set the stage with some discussion of the different algorithms and maybe survey a little bit of what's going on in nonlinear optimization. On the way down, Tamash told me that you had had other speakers come and talk about this, and of course nonlinear programming is a very broad field. This was my view of it, made up for an engineering optimization conference at Banff back around 1999. There are smooth constrained optimization problems with continuous variables. These may be non-convex. The objective of an algorithm is to find a local solution. And I'll talk about solvers for that. One of them is successive linear programming, which I enhanced, and David developed an implementation that Shell used to optimize their refineries. Then, of course, there are other areas which I won't have a chance to talk about. One is mixed integer nonlinear programming, where there are some integer variables, and there are both branch and bound and linearization approaches for this, which are now commercially available. Then there's the issue of if non-convexities are really a problem and you have multiple local optima, what kinds of heuristics or algorithms are available for global optimization? There's been quite an explosion of knowledge in this area, and a number of systems now contain multiple global optimizers. The one I'm most familiar with, because I have an optimizer in it, is GAMS. GAMS is the General Algebraic Modeling System. Put GAMS.com into Google, and you will come to their website. And if you link to something called Global World, then you will find many examples of global optimization problems, some articles, and descriptions of their solvers. Then there are non-smooth problems, which pose their own difficulties. Combinatorial problems really overlaps with discrete optimization. I maybe shouldn't include it, so it's certainly not solely under nonlinear programming. Sometimes you find yourself optimizing simulations that have noisy function values. Nowadays, the most systems for both Monte Carlo and discrete event simulation come with optimization modules. Crystal Ball and At Risk for doing Monte Carlo simulation in Excel, have optimizers, and a number of discrete event simulators, of which David is an expert user, also have optimizers that will choose parameters inside the simulation. Right? And then finally, there's the area of stochastic programming, which can give rise to very large and interesting problems. I talked about that yesterday under the heading of Portfolio Theory for Oil and Gas Development Projects. I might show you a little bit of that if time allows, which it probably won't because I'm taking too long to survey the field. Okay, the problems we'll discuss today in mathematical form have this structure. You have a vector of n continuous variables, functions which are at least continuous first partial derivatives, an objective function f, constraint functions gj. They can be inequalities or equalities. I pose them as two-sided inequalities, and of course you can have upper and lower bounds on the variables. In the process industries where you're modeling process units, including blending, usually the functions are smooth, but they may not be convex, and often we just don't know. But we know there are some non-convexities in there, and I'll leave that to David to talk about it. And these problems tend to be quite large, with maybe 10,000 variables and constraints or more. You can make them as big as you want by adding additional time periods or by modeling the interaction of several refineries. And fortunately, they're sparse, and so you can use sparse linear algebra to make these algorithms work. So most of the local optimizers are gradient-based. They rely on first derivatives and, of course, function values to guide their choice of search directions. One big class of such algorithms is GRG. I've worked on that quite a lot. How many people here have used the solver in Microsoft Excel? Oh, a few. Yeah, if you don't click Assume Linear Model and then you click Solve, then that's my solver. I worked with another guy who should get at least half the credit, probably more, Dan Feilstra, and he integrated it into Excel. And today there are enhancements to the Excel solver. And if you go to solver.com, you will find Frontline Systems, Dan's company, that has really done a wonderful job of putting all kinds of powerful solvers into Excel. It's a lot better than the built-in solver. So anyway, mine is a GRG algorithm, which stands for Generalized Reduced Gradient. It's really a nonlinear extension of the simplex method, which we'll come back to when we do successive linear programming. It has the same overall structure as the simplex. First, you get feasible in phase one, and if you can find a feasible solution, then you stay feasible while improving the objective in phase two. And of course, we all owe our existence to Sir Isaac Newton, at least in nonlinear programming, because his method is at the foundation of all this stuff. In GRG, we use equation solving methods to retain feasibility while we're changing some of the variables, and we use strategies developed for unconstrained optimization, like quasi-Newton or conjugate gradient methods, to vary the independent variables. Then dependent ones are recomputed by Newton's method to satisfy the equations. I would say that you can make this quite reliable. There are a number of good codes, and I have this one in the Microsoft Excel solver. This is a bit old. ConOpt is also an excellent code, and it's in the GAMS modeling language. Okay, then there are these successive quadratic programming algorithms which use Newton's method in another way. Basically, they apply Newton's method directly to the Kuhn-Tucker optimality conditions. And the system of Newton equations that you get when you linearize those optimality conditions turn out to be equivalent to solving a quadratic program. You have a quadratic objective to minimize, subject to linear constraints. These are linearizations of the nonlinear constraints. Okay, that's the gradient. And you, this matrix H here is kind of a key. It's the Hessian of the Lagrangian function. And in SQP, you can operate in two modes. One, you can approximate it by a positive definite matrix, and I think Larry Beagler was here, talked some about that. Or you can use the true Hessian. Then it might not be positive definite, but the positive definite approximations are dense. True Hessians are usually sparse if the problem is large, so there's an advantage, and you can deal with the indefiniteness. This is simply constraining the new X, which is the old X plus the change, dxi is the change in X, to satisfy its bounds. Okay? And there are many good SQP codes available. By the way, if you set H to 0, then you kind of have the foundations of successive linear programming. Not all of the algorithm is here, but then you're just optimizing a linearization of the objective subject to these linearizations of the constraints. But some safeguards have to be imposed to make sure that the change in X doesn't get too large, and that leads you into trust region theory and trust region algorithms. And the newest entry to this list, and Thomas is doing excellent work in this area, is interior point algorithms. And a simplified view says you're just applying successive quadratic programming to a barrier formulation of the problem, where the barrier function is the objective plus a barrier constant times the sum of the logs of the bound constraints. Okay? And one has to take the variables so that they're above their lower bound and below their upper bound, so the arguments of the logs are positive. And one has to reduce R while optimizing inexactly for each R chosen. If you do this, then you end up with a big system of Newton equations, which has a nice structure. And this was written in 99, but I must say that now there are more than experimental codes. Interesting to see how it changes. And there are special codes for linear and quadratic problems. Every linear programming system today includes a barrier code, and these are often more efficient than the simplex method, but not always. So both are included. And for both linear and quadratic programming, they can be very efficient, and also for general nonlinear programming. Somebody came and talked about automatic differentiation some time ago. H. How do you get H? It's the Hessian of the Lagrangian. So it involves Hessians of all the problem functions. You know, without automatic differentiation, there's really no hope. So today, finally, modeling languages have built in the ability to get not only first derivatives automatically, but also second derivatives. Okay. And that statement brings us around to something we shouldn't should mention. It's not just algorithms. You know, where did the how do you state a problem so that an algorithm can solve it? You have to communicate it to the algorithm, and if you write it in a general programming language, well, you know, there's a tedious job of interfacing. Every solver has its own interface. Instead, if the problem permits, you should use one of the algebraic modeling systems. This is by far not a complete list. I have most familiarity with GAMS, which probably has the most nonlinear solvers attached to it. How many people have used any of these languages? Okay, you guys have? Oh, good. What do you use? AMPL. Yeah, AMPL is good. This one. Not this one. Right. Yeah, AMPL is excellent. And there's another system called AIMS that Dave uses now, which is related to GAMS, but improves on it in some ways. Okay, and for those who haven't seen this before, these enable you to write out statements in this form. You have a set of called resource, and for every element R in resource, this statement defines a set of constraints called capacity of R, and each constraint has the form the sum over P in products, the resources of type R used by product P per unit times the number of units produced. That gives the total resources of type R to produce all products less than or equal to availability of R. And this is almost exactly the GAM syntax for that. It would look similar in other languages. And it generates a number of constraints equal to the cardinality of resource. So in one statement, you generate many constraints. And what's more, you can put conditions on this sum so that not all terms are included. And this is often important in practical problems. Okay? You can put in both linear and nonlinear functions. There's the full range of nonlinear functions. So basically, any problem you can write out easily in closed form, you can write in an algebraic modeling language. And there are many such. And Dave will tell you about a system called PROFIT that Shell developed in the 80s for refinery planning, in which all the models of the distillation columns and cat crackers and blending were coded in GAMS. GAMS then computes automatically first derivatives. You can choose several solvers, passes them to the solvers in the forms they want, does both linear and nonlinear problems, links to databases, reasonable reporting capabilities. The last GAMS model I built, the people wanted to take the data out of a spreadsheet, and so we did that, and they wanted to see the data in a spreadsheet, and we did that too. So that is a general algebraic modeling system specifically designed for nonlinear and linear optimization. There are other domain-specific modeling systems, and some are listed here. Aspen is a widely used system for chemical process modeling. You can model several different units, you can interconnect them together, you can do steady state and dynamic simulations of that interconnection of processes. And the company is AspenTech. Nastran is a probably the leading system for finite element structural analysis. All these systems have optimizers built into them, mostly for solving nonlinear problems. And I'll talk a little bit about some work I've been doing with the Nastran people related to this successive linear programming algorithm. Okay, so that's the end of the survey. Now let's get a little specific. This isn't what you expected to see. It can't be all dry, you know. In the beginning, there was the simplex method. It was delivered by George Danzig and, Bill Orchard Hayes wrote the first computer code at Rand Corporation. And it was good. That's my best imitation of a preacher. Nobody laughed, must be bad. But the simplex method was good. And it was particularly enjoyed by the suits up here who work in corporate planning and logistics. You know, their problems are simple. They just ship stuff to people, have to make sure that they get enough. Transportation problems, warehouse location, prototypical applications of linear programming. But I'm an engineer by training. Here are the engineers down here in NLP country amidst the rocks, wearing hard hats, clad in loincloths, and they knew that their problems weren't linear. So what to do? Well, it's a good thing that engineers have to take calculus, because there you learn Taylor's theorem, and you know that you can linearize nonlinear functions, and that approximation is good in some region about the current point. So you can linearize things, you can compute derivatives by finite differencing if no better alternative is available, approximate them, and you can pose a linearized problem, but you know that you need to put bounds on the changes in the variables, because otherwise the approximations won't be good far from the solution, the base point that you're at. So you linearize, you put in these bounds that define a truss region and limit you to some rectangle, say, about the current point. You solve that with the simplex method. Nowadays you could use a barrier method too. And then you have to consider whether the truss region is too big or too small, and whether the new point is better or worse than the old point. Right? Nice truss region theory has been developed. You know, it's not that new. And if the rules of the trust region adjuster are chosen properly and the logic is right, then you can generate very strong convergence proofs for such algorithms. So the engineers knew that you could do this, and the first SLP was actually developed by Shell Development Company back in 1950-something, two guys named Griffith and Stewart. And they called it the Method of Approximation Programming, MAP. And they did it because there were certain practical constraints. They had models in the 50s, there wasn't anything available commercially to solve nonlinear programs. Maybe some penalty function codes, but I think these problems probably would not have solved with those codes. They had linear programming. The oil industry is one of the first areas to use linear programming in blending, and then they extended it to overall planning in refineries. I say the recent explosion, this has not stopped. And of course, LPs keep getting better and better. So since you're solving a sequence of LPs, you inherit the benefits of any improvements in LP technology. These methods turn out to be, and I'll show you graphically why this is true, very efficient for highly constrained problems which have many active constraints at an optimum. And the mostly linear problems turn out to have optimal solutions which are highly constrained. Certainly if it was a completely linear, then there'd be a vertex that was optimal. And for historical and practical reasons, it's widely used in the oil and chemical industries because the planning of production there involves nonlinearities, and it leads to large problems. And I still would say that this is true. The number of rows greater than 10,000, this is a time-dependent statement. So maybe in the mid-90s, that was a big problem. Nowadays, some of the systems, I don't know, how big could you say nitro could solve? Really? Yes. Oh, that's interesting. Nitro is one of the second order, one of the interior point solvers for general NLP. And there are other ones that can solve, you know, bigger than this. But if I go to 200,000 rows, then maybe the answer is no. But I can always find CPLEX that can go up to 1,000,000. And so then you have some hope with SLP, while the others, you don't yet have hope. Okay, so here's the overall idea. Start with a nonlinear problem, linearize the nonlinear terms in Taylor series, thank you. Solve the linearized problem, relinearize, resolve, and yeah, I can be more precise with those statements. And here's a little picture. I've used this one for 30 years. It's a great example. Maybe shift it up a little bit. Here is a problem with two nonlinear constraints and a linear objective. This is a contour of constant value of the objective. The feasible region has one constraint, x squared plus y squared less than or equal to 25, so it's the interior and the boundary of this circle. And it has non-negativities, so I'm only showing the first quadrant. Here's the variables x and y. And there's another constraint, actually non-convex, x squared minus y squared less than or equal to 7. And that plots here in the first quadrant as one branch of a hyperbola. And the feasible region is bounded by those four curves. And the optimum, if this is a contour of constant value of the objective and it's increasing in this direction, then as you move, you know, slide the line perpendicular to this line, the last point of contact with the feasible region is here. So the optimum is at a vertex, okay, defined as a point where there are at least as many active constraints as there are variables. Okay, this is a non-degenerate vertex, exactly as many. Let's say the starting point is here. So about this point, we linearize. Actually, this was not meant to be a contour of the objective function, although it's close to it. This was meant to be the gradient of the objective, though. This is the linearization of this constraint about this point. Okay? Falls outside here. You have to think that the thing is like a sphere, and you're going up to the sphere starting from this point, putting a hyperplane to it, see where the hyperplane intersects the xy plane. So this is turns out to be redundant. This is the linearization of this constraint about this point. And then the box is determined by upper and lower bounds of plus 1. The absolute change in x is limited to 1. So the feasible region is determined by these step bounds or move limits and a little bit by the linearization of one constraint. This is redundant, and the new optimum is here. Okay? So that's iteration 1 of successive linear programming. In the old version, they would just accept that point. There are no tests made to see if it's better or worse, so there's really no hope that you could guarantee convergence of the method. Okay? But in this case, everything is fine because, as you can see here, the second step has a different, you know, these constraints start now to play a role. This is the linearization of this constraint about this point. This is the linearization of the other one. The feasible region of the second linearized subproblem is that. The LP solution, this is pointing at the wrong point. It should be right here. The true max is at the vertex. And so then this would be the next point that you linearize about. It's not feasible, actually, but it doesn't matter. Okay, so the next point will have a similar geometry, and the new point will be determined by the linearization of the two constraints that are active at the solution. That's Newton's method. Linearize each constraint. You're now solving a square system of equations and find the intersection of the linearizations. And that's known to converge with order 2 when it converges. Okay, but now you're within the radius of convergence, so this is wonderful. With only derivatives of order 1, you get convergence of order 2. It's like a gift from God. But it doesn't hold in general. The optimum has to be at a vertex. So that's why we say, well, if it really is, then actually it doesn't matter how highly nonlinear the problem. This kind of convergence will ultimately occur, assuming that you're going to a local solution that's at a vertex. And then you'll get that fast ultimate convergence rate. If it's not true, then you only get a linear convergence rate, and the ultimate rate is really, in order to get convergence at all, then you would have to cut the size of this box down. For example, the objective function here, this gradient is proportional to the vector 2, 1. So the objective is like 2x plus y. If I make it x plus 2y, then something different happens. Then the gradient points up like this, and the optimal solution is just on one constraint. So it's not a vertex. Okay? And then the only way to make this converge is to keep trimming down the size of the truss region. And the convergence will be linear. You have observed that kind of convergence. Right. So, let's see. Now, how am I doing? Oh, I have about 15 minutes or so, huh? 10. I can do it in 10. Okay. This algorithm can be improved, and guaranteed to be convergent, and what's more, it's much more reliable in practice. And here is a problem statement. You know, it shows a problem with some nonlinear parts and some linear parts. That's completely incidental to the discussion here. You can have some linear constraints as well. We make use of the L1 exact penalty function, which if you call the objective function H0 and x be the vector x1, x2, and you call these functions here hi of x, then you can leave the linear constraints out and just make a penalty function which is the objective plus a sum of positive weights times the absolute values of the constraints. It's well known that if the weights are above a threshold, and a threshold is the optimal value of the absolute Lagrange multiplier associated with that constraint, its optimal value, then this non-differentiable penalty function has a stationary point at every Kuhn-Tucker point of this problem. So, in a loose sense, we can say this problem here, the original, is equivalent to minimizing the exact penalty function subject to the linear constraint. Okay, presuming that I know weights which are above the threshold. Okay. But they only have to be big enough, and usually you can get an idea of what this is. So let's assume that. And then how do we do it? Well, a development which is very similar to steepest descent says, okay, here's the function, so replace... You can't linearize the absolute value, so don't even try. Just linearize the functions h0 and hi, and if you replace each of them by their first-order Taylor series, then you get an approximating problem in which you're trying to minimize this piecewise linear function subject to the linear constraints, d being the change in x. And the norm of the changes in the nonlinear variables should be less than or equal to some constant alpha. This norm can be the infinity norm, so it's just a set of bounds. So that's the approximating problem. I think I'll put these here. And that's equivalent to a linear program. that piecewise linear problem can be converted to a completely linear problem by introducing variables pi and ni, which roughly represent the positive and negative parts of the linearized function. Okay? And so with those new variables, you get something that looks like this: linear objective function to be minimized, subject to these linear constraints, where pi and ni have to be non-negative variables, and then any linear constraints, and the trust region, okay, defined by the bounds and defined by your trust region constant alpha that determines the size. And then you can prove convergence of this algorithm. Sorry for the indistinct printing. I'll tell you what it is, though. You pick a trust region constant alpha k. You have a base point xk at which these linearizations are computed, the gradients grad g0, grad gi, and you solve the LP at that base point with that trust region constant to give you a set of changes. Then you use this penalty function as a merit function. Roughly, it has a local minimum at every local minimum of the original problem. So if you make progress with that, you should be making progress overall. And you compute the actual reduction in the penalty function, the value at the old point minus the value at the new point. And if, since we're minimizing, if there's an improvement, the actual reduction is positive. The predicted reduction is the improvement in that piecewise linear approximation. And this should never be negative because zero is feasible, dk is optimal, it should never give you a higher value. In fact, if the p red is equal to zero, then this is a stationary point by definition of the exact penalty function. Okay, otherwise, so then you'll be forced to stop. And if you have a Kuhn-Tucker condition satisfied at this point, you would also stop. Otherwise, you can divide by that positive number, compute the ratio actual reduction to predicted reduction, whose sign is determined by whether or not this P has actually got bigger or got smaller. If it's got bigger, then the point's worse. The ratio's less than zero. Divide, you know, reduce the size of the trust region and resolve. Since these are Taylor series linearizations, as alpha approaches zero, the ratio approaches one. That's its ideal value. Otherwise, if the ratio is close enough to 1, say greater than 0.75, increase the size of the trust region. If it's too small, say less than 0.25, decrease the size and leave it alone. Otherwise, repeat. Okay? That's pretty much what you do. Yep. It's not very sensitive to those parameters either. Yeah, you mean this 0.25 and 0.75?
Well, to get close to convergence,
you've got to do something. Ah. Right, because this often stops when it may not meet the Kuhn-Tucker conditions. And because the rate of convergence is only linear, so you may have to stop it just when the objective is changing by too small an amount. And this is the theoretical properties of it. Every limit point of the sequence of points generated is a constrained stationary point of the exact penalty function. And, of course, this has been known for some time. These are the advantages, and that's the disadvantage. Okay, so it isn't like you should solve every problem with SLP, but you probably should solve some problems with SLP, and Dave's going to tell you about some of those problems, which include most production planning in refineries and some chemical plants. Let's see. Yes, that's... So that's the basic idea that leads up to Dave's talk, and I guess I have a few minutes to answer questions.
Thank you.
Yes, Karthik. Reduce gradient. Yeah, GRG is quite a different procedure. You know, I don't want to, that's a lecture in itself, but it's, I don't know, how would you say, it doesn't solve LPs, but it uses LP technology. This just uses LP as a black box and puts a loop around it. GRG is like lifting the lid of the box and going in there and tinkering with the parts. And Oh, yes, you saw that. Right, I did mean you. We have done a little bit of work on an algorithm that would do some SLP iterations and then would do some GRG iterations where it tried to get feasible again using Newton's method and took steps along more efficient search directions than would come out of SLP. If you look... Sorry. Yeah. Now, of course, you could always constrain x to be greater than or equal to some small positive constant, but sometimes the domain violations are more complicated than that. Maybe some nonlinear function has to have a certain sign.
ESLP is penalty.
Yeah. Right. Well, Shell implemented it, and now there's a system, I would say the best LP system today is CPLEX. The second best is Express. Express recently implemented an SLP algorithm, which I'm almost sure is this one. And I haven't seen any papers, it was just within the last year. And that's available commercially as part of the Express system. There's going to be one in GAMS soon that links to CPLEX, and I'm working with the GAMS people to make sure that it does stuff right and, you know, is pretty reliable. But most of the implementations up to now have been proprietary ones in various oil companies. I guess almost every oil company has some SLP, right?
There's a very good reason why I think that I'll get into in my talk as to why this is a good algorithm.
Question?
For non-linear programming, the nature of the problem is instead of global maximum, so we find
Yes.
How you manage that problem?